Today, topic is, I'm talking to a young woman who lost her dad on the 3rd of April. He's passed away while in custody, but the authorities are trying to say, no, he wasn't in custody. We'll hear this story from this young lady, Kylie Hampton. And I'm also will be talking to Bruce Campbell. Bruce Campbell is he's with the Western Australian Deaths in Custody Watch Committee. And the reason we're talking Western Australian Deaths in Custody Watch Committee is Kylie is in Western Australia. She's been living there for a while because her partner has worked. They've relocated over there, but she'll tell us who her mob is and stuff. But the actual death of her dad was in Alice Springs Hospital, the passing of her dad. Kylie Hampton joining me. Kylie, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm not bad. How's yourself?
Yeah, it's all... I don't have to deal with a death. So first up, my condolences to you and your family on the loss of your dad. It's a hell of a loss to lose one's dad. But in these circumstances that you're going to tell us about, it'd be more traumatic. So condolences for the loss of your dad, Kylie, to you and your family.
Thank you.
Tell me your mob, your country.
Okay, my mum, a Gurindji woman, and grew up in Alice Springs and Darwin. And my father, Arabunna man, his mother was from Anna Creek in, near Port Augusta. And she moved to Alice Springs when she was a teenager and had my father there. He grew up in Alice Springs all his life.
All right. Is it okay to mention your dad's name, considering he passed away recently?
Yep, my dad's name was Peter Clark.
Okay. He was incarcerated. He was incarcerated. What was he incarcerated for?
For possession of marijuana.
Okay. He'd almost served out his time. He went in as a sick man. He was a diagnosed diabetic when he went to prison?
That's right. He was diagnosed with diabetes.
Hmm. He'd almost served his time, some 3 years or so, almost served his time and was due for release. Is that right?
One week before his parole release date, he was taken to the hospital.
What was he taken to hospital for?
He had been constantly coughing. he had emphysema and pneumonia. And Dad was a bad smoker, so he had been constantly coughing. Due to that, I think the week before that, he was taken to the hospital. He had been coughing and complaining of chest pains, and he ended up in the hospital on the 19th of March, a week before his parole. It was the corrective services that took him there.
All right.
So he was due for release on the 26th of March.
1 week to the day later, that after he'd entered hospital, admitted to hospital.
That's right. So when he got there, he must have thought that he was just going to be, because the doctor explained to him that he would just be sedated, just to help him with his coughing, and that they would bring him off the sedation in a couple of days. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. He didn't come out of the coma at all. So we were later informed after Dad died that he had died from pneumonia, emphysema and cancer in the lung.
All right. He said your auntie, you know, your dad's sister, or you were telling me that he had been asked by a member of the family, had he asked to see a doctor when he was coughing and when he was feeling ill.
Yeah, and
what was his response?
Yeah, auntie's asked him, you know, like, have you gone to see the doctor about your coughing? It doesn't sound too good. And he said, yeah, they just think I'm whinging in here. He's not bad here. They're really racist, you know, the Buffaloes.
That was your father's comment to his sister?
That was the exact comment. He said that to me as well.
So he didn't feel inclined or encouraged to be wanting to raise the issue of illness at all because of this attitude, this feeling there?
That's probably it.
Mm. When he was admitted to hospital, he was handcuffed.
Yeah, so what had happened is my auntie and uncle, his sister and his brother, both visited him prior to him going in the ICU, and they were horrified to see that Dad had been shackled at the left ankle to his bedside. A prison guard was monitoring their short visit. So they had to ring. What happened also there is my auntie had to ring the prisons to ask if she was able to go and visit her brother. So during this time, he was cuffed at the ankle and a prison guard was at his bedside monitoring his visits. This happened for a further 2 days, even while he was in ICU. So after 2 days, they must have realised that Dad was not waking up. His condition was worsening and the prison guard was pulled off duty and he died not quite 2 weeks later, unable to sign parole release forms.
All right. Now, do you think the prison protocols, corrections protocols, death in custody recommendations, the Royal Commission to Death in Custody recommendation and things, how do you feel was there compliance with any of these recommendations or the protocols of the prisons?
No, well, exactly, Tiger. My concern is what protocols, if so, in their duty of care, were followed treating my father? You know, where's the prison protocols for shackling a sick man, and may I remind you, in ICU, to the bedside a week before his parole?
Hmm. And he went into a coma soon after, like in that early stage, did he?
Yeah, he didn't wake up.
Right.
When he did open his eyes, he was just all shackled and a big tube down his... It wasn't even him.
Yeah, yeah. I might...
Severely sedated.
Yeah. I might introduce Bruce Campbell from the Western Australian Deaths in Custody and welcome him to the Deaths in Custody Watch Committee who's joining us. Bruce, welcome to Let's Talk. How are you?
Oh, very good, thank you. And hello to everyone.
I've got Kylie.
Bruce, how are you?
G'day, Kylie. How are you? Great.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, excellent. Great to finally speak to you. We've been corresponding by email.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. Bruce, Kylie was just saying she's not too sure of what the protocols and policies are in dealing with someone that's incarcerated, been taken to hospital and stuff, but she's... told us that her dad was shackled to the bed and had a police guard or a prison guard there monitoring, keeping a watch on those coming and going and everything like that.
Yeah, their short visit, yep.
Mm. What do you feel about this as far as policies, deaths in custody recommendations, Bruce?
Yes, well, certainly... The diagnosis where, and I've discussed it with Kyla, and we do have permission to use the gentleman's name, Mr. Clark, where Mr. Clark's illness was not picked up by the medical team within the prison, and also where he was asking to see a doctor and that was denied. Access to, timely access to medical, medical attention is a key finding of the Royal Commission from over 20 years ago, and absolutely it's something that's recently occurred in Western Australia where another chap who was just unfortunately injured, as a result of some injuries that could have been fixed, and actually the chap didn't really die, but he was just denied access to proper medical care. So yes, and absolutely, in the Mr. Clark case here, who unfortunately, when you do have a cancer, it can be quite bad, but who knows what could have been done in the meantime.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah, that's right. And I'd just like to comment there too, Bruce, was it likely that his condition could have been noticed in the early stages of his duty of care if it was practiced in the Alice Springs prison? Quite possibly, yes, I believe. How could he have been, hospitalised 5 months prior in October 2011 with pneumonia and then they didn't pick up no cancer and 5 months later he died of cancer, emphysema, pneumonia?
So there's a history.
Conditions.
There's a history of illness there, and he was a diagnosed diabetic when he went in. So your yes. questions are quite relevant there, Kylie, in that how come when 5 months earlier he was... was he admitted to hospital then 5 months earlier with pneumonia,
yes,
was he?
In October 2011.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering why they didn't pick up the pneumonia then.
Yeah, and why it wasn't treated
properly. Not the pneumonia, sorry, the cancer then.
The cancer, yeah, yep.
Yes.
Yes. Now... the other issue, one of the main issues, well, another one of these, the factors involved here that raises concern is, upon hearing of your dad's death, some time after you've requested from the doctor at Alice Springs Hospital for the release of your dad's body, so you could go ahead with the with your sorry business and stuff.
Yeah, that's right. The doctor in charge of Dad's care, Dr. Raj, at the Alice Springs Hospital in ICU, stated that they would not have a coroner investigate. As he said, that it wasn't going to be treated as a death in custody. He was a free man as of the 26th of March at midnight. So, I don't know. I mean, we ended up requesting ourselves as a family to get an autopsy done because I thought that was quite dodgy. He rang the coroner's office and then said that they weren't treating it as a death in custody.
What can you say about that, Bruce?
Oh, well, just to, it's really terrible. I mean, it's just a case where, the person, Mr. Clark, was, taken to hospital. He's due for parole very close to the date anyway. And rather upon the diagnosis of or just recognition of being very ill, they just didn't say, well, we'll bring the parole slightly forward and where they did recognise that it had terminal cancer, they could just say, well, all right, you can we'll bring the parole date forward by even if it was 2 weeks or whatever, wouldn't have taken much. That way, Mr. Clark wouldn't have to be shackled. Apparently he was shackled to the bed, throughout the his hospital stay, and then give him some peace of mind, and also allow free visits from the relatives. But yeah, it's just a really I kind of see it's just a horrible little vindictive, bureaucratic, officious nature of the prisons, where even if there's a chap who's obviously very ill, they wouldn't even consider that. It doesn't take much to say, okay, well, we'll change a bit of paper to say you're a free man and, please, we'll do what we can for you.
Well, they have to do that. The Northern Territory, correct, the Northern Territory government have to do that because they're under some serious scrutiny, criticism at the moment because of recent deaths in custody, even Western Australian corrections with the... the two attempted suicides over there within 12 hours, Greenock Prison now terminating the First Nations woman there. I was talking to Jerry Georgiatis only a few days ago, and he was telling us about that situation. So governments, but particularly Northern Territory government, they feel that they have to try and squirm out from under the focus of being a death in custody. So they just say, oh, no, he would have been released on the 26th.
And I'd like to comment on that too, Tiger. Like, when you both talked about that issue there, the question is, why would the doctor in charge of ICU say he needed to check if it was a death in custody, then ring back to say it wasn't, and, prior to watching him be monitored and shackled? I mean, how ridiculous. Of course it was.
He was not a free man, is what you're saying.
Sweep another black man's death under the carpet, like palming off responsibility. It's what these government mob do best. And you just hear it time after time.
Yeah, you certainly do. And the lady over there in the west at Greenock Prison is Joyce Capewell, who has now been stood down because she spoke to the media, but she went out on strike because of the way the Western Australian corrections treated these two young brothers over there. So there's a history of this, and it goes way back, a long way. But the point today is that here we have the Northern Territory government, corrections, Department of Corrections, saying that this was not a death in custody because he was due. Mr. Clark was due for parole on the 26th, and his death occurred on the 3rd of April, so a week later he died, but he died a free man. How outrageous, what a dirty, rotten, blatant lie is this? So this is a horrific thing for you and your family to be faced with, Kylie.
Yeah, so, like, you know, it's just nonsense, you know. Like, his family, we just absolutely dispute this false reasoning. See, like, on the fact that on 26th of March, Dad was seriously ill in an induced coma, and therefore he was in no way possible fit enough to have a bedside parole performed.
Yeah. It's just outrageous. Now, you actually, how long was it before you actually took possession of your dad's body and was able to put him to rest? Did that drag out at all? Was there some time?
Because the doctor came back and said that they weren't going to do a autopsy. It was my sister that stated to me, we need to be smart here because if we're going to have a leg to stand on legally down the track, we need to have this performed, I think.
Were you able to do that?
So we were able to prove it. Well, he was a bit hesitant when I went in to request Dad have an autopsy and sign some paperwork and just said, you know, that we the family wanted this to happen. We wanted to know what sort of cancer it was. Prior to both his brothers dying from cancer as well, we just wanted to know the history, obviously, and he was a bit hesitant, but they ended up just doing a general autopsy, just looking at his organs, and they found out that he did have cancer in the left side of the lung. Mm. So I still haven't to date got a copy of the autopsy.
All right. Bruce, any comments?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, it just really highlights the vicious and twisted nature of the prison system. Where Mr. Clark was still conscious, they didn't just say, "Well, geez, mate, you're close to your parole." You know, we'll release you early, even though you unfortunately was in hospital. But on the other hand, where he did go into a conscious and actually, you know, clocked up his parole, but was still in custody, because that's the main thing. He definitely was still in custody, whether he'd served his parole or the technicalities of that. They want to try to wriggle out of it actually being, you know, recorded as a death in custody, and with the doctor having to go check. I appreciate that doctors aren't necessarily, you know, following up with the particular, technicalities themselves, but the facts of him being, not released, it's just, you know, black and white. It's ridiculous. It's just another example of the, prison systems trying to, underfund or under-resource, But in regards to Joyce Cape, I did attend the public meeting up in Geraldton, I think it was last Friday, and that's just another just shocking example where the AVS, Aboriginal Prisoner Visitor Scheme, which is a key recommendation of the Death in Custody Commission, Royal Commission, is just being, once again, underfunded and under-resourced. And, it's just really systemic.
So some of the facts here are, what is Mr. Clark was sick enough to be in ICU, intensive care, and still shackled to the hospital bed.
How my father was shackled, only one can distress how heartbreaking this is. Knowing your father is dying and knowing he's shackled in the bed in ICU, not only is it sickening, it's just totally inexcusable. I feel my dad died with no dignity. My family had no justice. I'd just like to expose the NT government for their lack of care during this time as an inmate. And, let me remind you that the prison have an inmate duty of care to those under their responsibility. Where the hell was that?
Yeah. Yes, no, this is another sickening story of mistreatment of First Nations people, particularly while incarcerated. To try to say that Mr. Clark was a free man when he died, that's an outrageous comment to make. Where to from here, Kylie? What's the family feel needs to be done?
We feel that there needs to be a full coronial investigation into, you know, like maybe a public inquiry headed by a QC so that everything can be taken into consideration while investigating his death in custody. I just don't trust these government departments at the moment, Tiger. I've got no real trust in them. I just... Because they just covert information to one another, you know?
Yeah, well, you can't have any faith in it being done with corrections doing their own inquiries or and stuff. It's got to be independent. There's no question about that.
That's right. Not only that, we had another brother. My brother died, another death in custody. He was killed in a motorbike accident. So the same coroner that will be doing my dad's coronial investigation, he actually did my brother's, and we got no justice out of my brother's dying as well. It was a police chase.
All right.
I don't know.
Very sad. Bruce, what can what do you see can be done? What needs? I mean, we've also got the recent. What was it? 3 or 4 years? Might have been 5 years ago. Young Rex Bellotti. That was a police incident over there in WA. Yeah. Again, no justice whatsoever. So the system that the Western Australian government, but Northern Territory as well, they've got some serious questions to be answered. Where do you see this being? What can be done, Bruce, as a member of the Deaths in Custody Watch Committee over there?
Well, yes, mate. The bloody case is just, it's an absolute. I mean, I happen to be a white Australian, and if it did happen to a white Australian, it would be on the front page of the West Australian local paper over here straight away, and it'd be followed through by media. But because, young Rex was just attending a funeral and the police, through their neglect, run him over. But there's been no justice, and the family have been campaigning very hard over here. And it's still, virtually coming to, I think, a situation where, thanks to the efforts of people like, of course, the Rex family, but bloody family, but Shiloh Harrison over here, and also Jerry, they've campaigned and raised awareness that the government is going to address it. But, I mean, it's really just ridiculous where, if you're Aboriginal, you have to launch a huge campaign to actually just get some basic kind of justice and compensation. It's just absolutely appalling.
Yes, it certainly is.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing would be... Oh, sorry, Kylie.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I understand totally what you're trying to say there, Bruce, and, like, my heart goes out to that family. Like, one death is one death too many, this kid and, like, my dad, they are human beings, and they got a family, My dad wanted to get out and come and see his kids and travel, He had things to do.
Yes, that certainly is. Look, Bruce, we might say... thanks for joining us. I'll keep Kylie on. We've got a few people wanting to call us and make a comment. Kylie, are you right to stay on a little bit longer?
Yeah, sure.
You don't
thank
have
you,
to.
Bruce.
Bruce, thank you very much for joining us, mate.
Thank you.
Is there anything you want to say in winding up? What can people do? We've got listeners that are concerned. The phones are going off here. I'm unable to take your calls. That's why I've got to drop you off. But what can people do? They're hearing yet again on this program another death in custody, another traumatic situation for another First Nations family. And they hear it all too often on this program. They hear about it. What can people do out there, Bruce? You're a white Australian. You're saying you don't feel real good about this stuff. What can people do?
I'm absolutely ashamed about all these issues. It's just disgusting, very disturbing. The number one thing I could say was for people to get together and form local death in custody watch groups. When I went up to Geraldton, the local people, the Yamaji, they met and decided to form their own death in custody watch group, and that's to basically watch over Greenough Prison because they're very unhappy about what's occurring there. Cairns people have set one up, the Far North Queensland group, who I've got some contact with. But the number one thing I could say is, if you're listening to this now and you're mad as hell, is to get organised, talk to your friends and your family, and set up a local group. And, even if it's anything, writing one letter, a month, whatever you, the bare minimum you can do. But maybe adopt a prison where you're monitoring it and putting pressure on the corrective services to provide, you know, adequate care. As Kylie says, it's an absolute fundamental of the Prisons Act, etc., to provide a safe and look after the welfare of prisoners. It's just that's the number one thing people can do if they're listening right now.
Thank you there to Bruce Campbell from the West Australia Death and Custody Watch Committee talking to us. And I still have Kylie Hampton, the daughter of Mr. Clark, who passed away while in custody. Let there be no doubt about that. He was in custody. The authorities are trying to distance themselves and say that he was released when, in fact, he was in a coma, unable to sign anything. So it's really pathetic in how they how the authorities lie and squirm and manipulate information and stuff. I've got a caller on the line. Kylie is still with us, and I've got a caller on the line, Darren. Hello, Darren. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, Tiger.
Now, I was talking to another member of your family, Nicolette, who's waiting for a call, so I don't necessarily need to call to Nicolette because you've got the information. You're going to tell me your family's experience. What is it?
Basically, my brother's in prison. He's actually in hospital at the moment. He's not convicted of any crime at all. He's out on bail, but the police pulled him over and put him back on some conspiracy charges. But basically,
where and when was this?
3 weeks ago, he actually went to Hakea in a remand centre.
Where's Hakea? Over there in Western Australia?
Yeah, that's right. It's right in Perth. Okay. Basically, he needs medication every day to survive. His heart needs a transplant. He got administered his medication for 1 day. After that, the guards never gave him his medication for 2 or 3 days.
So he hasn't been convicted of any... He hasn't been to court and convicted. He's just been pulled in on a charge, on remand, I'd imagine.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So basically now he, without the medication, his life can't be sustained. He never got his medication after the first 2 days, and he felt ill. He told the guards they didn't give him anything except Panadol. Next minute, they were in his cell. They had to cut his arm apart to try to put in some sort of drip to bring him back. They got him into the ambulance and took him to Royal Perth, where he was in ICU for a couple of days. He was shackled to a bed, both legs together, 24 hours a day. He's got two guards. Our family was cut off from contacting him at first, but then we're allowed to call once or twice a day.
So he's still in hospital as we speak?
He's in hospital as we speak, but basically they wanted to get him out of hospital. Once they got him out of ICU, I went to visit him, and they're trying to take him back to Hakea, which hasn't got an infirmary. So the demands were met that they went to Casuarina, a maximum security jail, so that he could have nurses looking after him, administer his medication and look after him. He lasted 2 days in there when he told the nurse in the jail that he felt really cold and he couldn't breathe properly. She slammed the window in his face and told him that he had his medication and he had blankets, so he'll be right. My mum then had to call. But once he spoke to my mother, she sort of demanded that he got taken away. Another nurse got him to Royal Perth once again, where he still is.
Mate, I've got to ask you this question. Is he a black fella or a white fella?
He's a white fella.
He's a white fella. So there you go. They're not discriminating too much in this particular jail and hospital?
No, they're not biased in any way, but they actually don't take his health into account. He actually needs a transplant now because of this. He needs to be in hospital, but the ward doctors said the wards are full. They need him out of hospital. But I've spoken to Gary Georgiadis in regards to this after hearing your program last week. He's going to help us, and it might be going into the papers, the NIT, tomorrow, maybe some other papers. But basically, his human rights have been ignored.
He's got none, as far as they're concerned.
No, he's shackled to a bed with guards 24 hours a day, and this time it's been really hard because Casuarina's a maximum security. And really hard to actually contact or even get visitation rights.
All right. This is outrageous, mate. You must be horrified at hearing Kylie's story this morning about losing her dad.
He needs a transplant. They're not going to give him one. They're going to make him sort of show that after 12 months he can sort of stay on the straight and narrow. But they're going to try to staple a valve back together on his heart. They're making the decision as we speak. But they're also trying to get him out of there as well, back to the prison.
This is outrageous. Well, it's good that you're in touch with Gerry Georgiadis. He's certainly a man that's a good advocate over there.
Yeah, we actually, when I told him the story, he said it's the worst case of human rights deprivation that he's actually heard of in his entire history of dealing with this sort of stuff.
Yeah, and he's doing a lot of research.